Well, my name is Billy. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hey, Billy.
What that means to me is that I can't drink alcohol, use drugs, and do this thing everybody else calls life successfully. I proved it to myself. I ain't even real good with 5-hour energy, man. I drank some this morning. I usually take like a sip of a Monster in the morning. And this morning, my wife had some 5-hour energy. I drank about that much. Dude, got me sprung. I'm damn near ready to get a desire kit. I'm serious, man. I know, it's funny, but see, I'm serious. I'm like, damn, what's wrong with me? All crunk and shit. Good morning. So, well, I guess looking around the room, let's go over that way, maybe we ought to ask God in. Third step prayer.
God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
So, good morning. So there's a line in the big book that I dig on quite often. It's a little bit funny to me, but it really ain't funny. They say, there's a part in there that says we can, newcomers may be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity, how we burst into merriment over seemingly tragic affairs and shit. There's another line, this is what I was digging on, it's kind of funny. Matt Howard, it says, it was the usual situation, just the funny part to me. You know, we answer a bunch of calls. I often think that it ought to be part of every guy in here's protocol, Ryan, to have to answer the phones here for a day. That ought to be part of our treatment plan. Steven, you got to answer phones today. You know what I mean? Because every time somebody calls here, it's the usual situation. But it's always somebody begging for one of these beds that we're in. You know what I mean, Matt? It's usually somebody's mama or somebody's family or the person themselves. And anyway, in the book, what it says, Dalton Gang, it says it was the usual situation. And it says, home in jeopardy, you know. Anyway, it's just comical to me. Home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted, bills in arrears. I always laugh at that part, John, you know. I don't know if y'all remember Mike Pender. Anybody know Mike Pender? Remember Mike Pender? Yeah, he's in the great meeting in the sky, I guess you'd say. Him and Kale up there cheering Saturday night's meeting. But, anyway, he would say that bills in arrears, you know what that means, Dalton? I guess so. In arrears. Pender used to say that, man, that's where you get so far behind on your bills. The bill collectors keep calling. They finally call so much, you tell them stick it in their ass. He said that's bills in arrears. Anyway, with anyway, the usual situation. It says the guy showed up here, and I think he's talking about Dr. Bob. He says, He showed up here painfully aware of being somehow abnormal. And these are powerful lines, fellas. He showed up here painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, but he did not yet fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. You with me? So, Chuck always says, you know, I ain't got to convince them that they're an alcoholic. I got to convince them that I'm one, you know? Little Tyler, I used to wonder why I was so unreachable. all the treatment centers I'd been to and all the things I'd done, especially a long time after I decided, okay, this time I mean it, you know, this time I'm done. And how one time in Austin, Texas, I'd waited in line. I had a job making, you know, a bunch of money. And, like a couple of $100,000 a year. And I'd come in and my wife had gotten to where she had zero tolerance policy. Anybody relate to that one? And so she found Billy using again. And the next day I was out of there. And I made it about a week or 10 days before the boss called me up to the office. And they found some heroin balloons in the trash can in one of the bathrooms. And so, you know, they knew what time it was because we played before. And they knew when Billy was on, shit, I was on. But when I wasn't on, shit, stuff's about to come up missing. And it wasn't going to be good. And so he was real kind to me. He said he was going to give me a week or 10 days to get my affairs in order, but then he wanted me to resign. And I started that job when I got out of TDC, Cullen, I got that job through Project Rio. These are some terms some of you youngsters might want to get familiar with if you don't straighten up. What Project Rio is reintegration of offenders, right? I went from Vanderbilt University to Ferguson University. When I got out of there, I had two felonies, and now I'm trying to get a job with felony convictions. So the parole office helped me. They had the Project Rio thing. It was reintegration of offenders. And if these people would hire me, they wouldn't have to pay any unemployment taxes on me. And the state of Texas would give them like $2 or something like that towards my hourly rate. And back then, you know, I think minimum wage was, you know, $5 or some shit. I don't even know what it is now, but so they hired me making like $7 an hour, and my job was going to be going with this ceiling fan repair dude out to these houses where he was balancing fans and repairing fans, and I'd hand him a screwdriver and shit. Okay, go to the truck and get me a balancing kit, you know, one of those type of gigs. And I did that for a week, and then the first week, after the first week, they asked me to help out in sales because I was young, personable young man, and they asked me to help out in sales because they had this big ad they were going to put in the paper for Hunter ceiling fans. I ain't no shit about ceiling fans, you know, but I'm street smart, you know what I mean? Can y'all relate? And so they asked me if I'd help out in sales, and so right before grand opening Saturday morning for the sale, they had this big Hunter ceiling fan ad in the American Statesman newspaper. It took up a whole page. And what they had this big $50 for a Hunter ceiling fan, $49.99 or some shit, right? And right before the store was about to open, the owner of the place grabbed me and he said, okay, young man, see this fan right here? This is the fan that's in the paper for $49, okay? It's made in Taiwan. It's called a Hunter Summer Breeze or some shit. You know, he told me a little bit about the blade pitch and all that stuff. He said basically what he told me about that fan was don't sell that fan. They had a huge, big page on it, too, $49 for this fan, right? He said, this fan over here is $219. It's a Hunter original made in Memphis, Tennessee. It's an old bath motor, 15 degree. I can tell you everything about it now. I didn't know shit about it, man. He said, what I want you to do is sell that fan, right? You ever hear Leonardo DiCaprio, what's my motivation? He said, every one of those you sell, I'll give you a $5 fifth, just $5 for every one of those you sell. I said, okay, you know, dude, right? So, right before the store opened, one of the other salesmen, I think it was the sales manager, was over there balancing that $49 fan because it was wobbling. And I said, you know, I'm street smart, Paul. I said, what are you doing, man? He said, we just, you know, trying to, I said, man, don't balance that one, balance that one. we're out, he's not idiots, right? Anyway, and then the store opened, and what I started doing was selling a whole bunch of them fans, dude. That's what I did, right? In fact, I sold so many, they asked me to come on full-time in sales after that. The hell with the maintenance shit. 6 months later, I was the sales manager. You know, I think another month after that, I was the general manager of the ceiling fan and lighting showroom. We can roll, can't we? Right? And before you know, I'm making $200,000 a year. You know what I mean? Started at $7. And I mean like 7-8 months later. You with me? We can roll, can't we? And anyway, fast forward. He found some heroin balloons in the trash can. He said he's going to give me 7 days or, you know, a week or 10 days to get my affairs in order, you know, because we just built a new house. And my Christmas bonus that year was $16,000. I used it to, just my Christmas bonus, you know. And anyway, she put me out, and I'm, you know, I don't know, a couple weeks later he says, you know, he's going to need me to to go ahead and resign.
Right.
And you know what I told him that day? I think it's called alcoholic delusion. He said he's going to give me a week or something like that, RD. I said, fuck you. Fuck you. You need me a hell of a lot more than I need you. You know how the amazing recuperative powers of the alcoholic ego? Fuck you. And I was out of there.
Dude, I left. I'll show that. Blah, blah, blah.
And anyway, a couple weeks later, I don't know, maybe a month later, now I'm sleeping underneath the crack house. This is true. No car, no nothing. Getting up at like 5:30 in the morning, going downtown Austin, doing day labor, running a jackhammer all day so I can get like $45, so I can get three balloons, two bottles of MD-2020, so I can pass out, so I can get up and go do it again the next day. And, why did I share that part? What was I going with? Oh, yeah. It was the usual situation, you know. And showed up here being painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, did not yet fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. Because I got into treatment after, you know, about another month after that. What I used to do, I'd get out from, and I say I slept under a crack house. The reason I slept under a crack house, I'm one of those guys, I end up homeless more times than I could count. But it wasn't because I didn't have anywhere to go, Stephen. It's because I couldn't stay. You go to mama's house and, you know, she's going to try to help me and stuff, but I couldn't stay. You know, that's why I didn't go. Because I knew I couldn't stay. You know what I mean? And so, I said I was going to try to get into treatment. Of course, you know, I ain't got shit now. And so they had Austin Recovery Center over there that had state funding, but they said you had to go early in the morning, line up, try to get in state funding. And so what I was sharing with you guys is I finally got to a place where I really wanted to stop. I used to go over to that convenience store. Anybody know Austin, Texas? Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a Ben White, 71, they call it, Ben White and Congress and South First. I was staying right around South First. And Ben White is where I was. There's a hospital right over there, right? And they had taken, there was these houses that they had condemned. They were fixing the hospital at the bottom, they were fixing to bulldoze them and turn them into a parking lot. And that was the kind of crack house I was staying at. And anyway, I remember, sick and, you know, couldn't stop using, and it had gotten real bad. And so I'd go over to that convenience store. That's back when they'd have those old phone books hanging from the chain at the payphones. And I'd look through them things, and I'd call these, like, 1-800 number hotlines on people trying to get help. And I'd get somebody, like, in freaking Washington, D.C. or something on the phone, you know, talking about getting treatment. Yeah, anybody ever had to do that? I did. Anyway, when I heard about this Austin Recovery Center thing, they had a, if you went early in the morning, you could line up and try to get state funding. So I would go. And they got me on the list, and they said, okay, we'll be back tomorrow. And I'd have to get up 6 o'clock in the morning to save my wake up, get up there 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, can I get in, can I get in? Okay, so I'd get over there so I could get in the day labor so I could make my $45 again so I could go. I did that for like 15 or 16 or 17 weekdays in a row, not counting weekends, so they finally let me in. And they gave me detox, and they had, at Austin Recovery Center, anybody ever been there? They had this thing called the Mansion. Is where you detoxed at. It was called the Mansion. It's right there on the drag of UT. What is that, Guadalupe? Yeah, Guadalupe. And they had this old apartment building across the street where treatment was. I finally detoxed. I got over there into the treatment part. I was there about a week or seven, 8, 9, 10 days, something like that. They took us to the park, Zilker Park, right down the road to play basketball one day. And I had my homeboy bring me here and went to the park. And ended up getting kicked out of there. Overshot the mark, did a little too much, where I was feeling a little extra spiritual, nodding off in group and stuff. And got kicked out of there. That's after waiting in line every day. So, again, I got here at 40 years old. I tell y'all I've been to countless treatment centers, and the reason I say that is because I lost count, and that's the absolute truth about me. I have no idea how many it was. So now here again, I show up here at 40. And I was painfully aware of being somehow abnormal. I couldn't have told you this then, but the absolute truth was, Cullen, I was painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, but I did not yet fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. And man, I thought I did. You know what I mean? You don't roll like I roll and get started as many times as I got started and couldn't stop as many times as I couldn't stop. Shit. You know what I mean? You don't get stopped as many times as I've been stopped and couldn't stop starting as many times as I couldn't stop starting. You know, when they broke the stick man off to me here, at least that allergy part, hell, I was like, okay, what else you got? You know, no shit, that's me. Right? But then they began to describe the obsession. And that's what really got me into this thing called alcoholism. You know, RD2, we talked about the allergy and how shit splatters, and if I eat the X-Lax, it's going to get shitty because I say so. I know that about me, and I think I knew it about me for a while. You know what I mean? I never really sat down and conceded to my innermost self that I had an allergy. I didn't know that's what it was. I'd been to a bunch of treatment centers and had no idea that they called it an allergy. I don't know if that part just went past me or they never read it to me. I don't know. They called it a lot of other shit, and I never heard it called an allergy. And so, but then he got me on that obsession. And basically, you'll hear everybody say that obsession, you know, it's the idea that someday, what they say is that it's going to be different this time. And I'd heard that before I got here, too. Oh, yeah, it's doing the same thing over and over, expecting different results. I'd heard that about 4,000 times before I got to Bear Recovery Center. And then some guy would say something cute, said, no, it ain't. It's doing the same thing over and over again, knowing what the results are going to be. And I'd go, yeah, that sounds more like me. And again, I'd hear all this party line shit that we hear in meetings, you know, and I could say it real good and speak it real good. But I got with a guy, and he shared with me about the obsession, and he had me write down my consequence list and what it looked like in my life and all the treatment centers I'd went to. You know, and here I am again, and in the 12 and 12 it says, we'll arrive here, Cullen, and we're liable to breathe a great sigh of relief and say, woo, thank God that's over. I ain't going to have to go through that again. Instead of shit. Right? So he had me write down my consequence list. And when they talked about the great obsession, you know, I'd never heard it put to me this way. There's a line in the 12 and 12 that says we were smitten by an insane urge. An insane urge. And if you break that down into everyday language like I like to do, huh, Stephen, take it piece by piece. What's an insane urge, bud? If we're going to use everyday language, what's insane mean? It's crazy. And an urge is a want to, a crazy want to, right? And so I would go to meetings and they'd say the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop. And I told you I finally got to a place where I desired to stop. You know what I mean? And it turns out that's when things got real. You know, I shared with y'all the other day, it got real pitiful. It got real incomprehensible and real demoralizing. After I decided I didn't want to do it anymore, that's when shit got real pitiful and real incomprehensible to me. Right? I couldn't comprehend that I was going to do that again. I couldn't comprehend that I was going to have to detox. I couldn't even comprehend that the day I got out of the place, the day I got out of the next place, the day I got out of the next place. So they had me write down this timeline about Billy. It's real vital that I get honest with myself, to myself, about myself. And I had all these treatment attempts. And the guy took a minute on step one. He said, well, let's break it down, Billy. You know, because the truth was, I wouldn't say it out loud to him. But they said, you know, that I was doing it against, I'd lost the power of choice, you know, in drink, right? Once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first one. Our defense must come from a higher power, you know, and that kind of stuff. And so, one of the alcoholic delusions that I showed up here with, see, here's what the deal is with me, y'all. I showed up here being painfully aware of being somehow abnormal. I did not yet fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. I still showed up here at 40 years old after countless treatment centers. This is really what I thought if I was honest with you about it, Larry. Right? I thought being an alcoholic addict meant I can't drink no more. Right? And I finally got it too. Shit, that's me. I can't drink. I can't drink no more. Shit. I can't, you know, I've discovered my natural progression is, you know, for a long time alcohol wasn't my problem. It's that damn drugs, man. That shit is good. And I finally discovered, I proved it to myself like Bill Wilson did in his story, how he finally saw he couldn't have so much as one drink and he was through forever. And I've made lots of sweet promises before this, but this time my wife happily observed I meant business and she did. I did. And the next line in Bill's story and in Billy's story too was shortly afterwards I came home drunk. And Bill says, was I crazy? Because such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being exactly that, man. Right? So, but the real deal was, I really, if I thought I knew what it meant to be alcoholic and addict, Eric, but what I thought that meant is I can't drink and use no more. You with me? And then I would drink and use again. And I share with you guys that we've got words around here like relapse, Cullen. You know, you ever hear them say that one? That's what they call it, relapse, right? That's what a lot of people call it. To your own self be true, I don't know what the hell you call it. But to me, what would happen with Billy is, I don't debate the words of the English language and shit, and all that, you know, somebody says, well, you have to work some program for a while and then use it again for it to be relapsed and all this kind of shit. And, but I'll tell you what happened with Billy is I would use again. You heard me? And then after that, I would use again. And then I would use again. And then what I would do, Jared, is I would use again. And then I would use again, I would use again. He said, if it helps you sleep at night and make you feel a little better and stuff, call it whatever the fuck you want to. Call it relapse, whatever you want to. But it's called using again. And then we'd use again, and we'd use again, and we'd use again. And he got here and he talked about, have you ever stayed sober? Man, have you ever stayed sober? So he sits me down. I was painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, but I did not yet fully realize what it meant to be alcoholic. I got that part. I can't drink and use, man. I can't drink and use no more, shit. I can't, and I'm in it with everything in me, right? See, I suffered from this alcoholic delusion that so many of us do, that one of these days you'll want too bad enough, and then you can stop. In 12 and 12, it says, every natural instinct inside of me cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. When I finally decided I meant it and I'm done, that's when things got real shitty. When I finally said, damn it, I mean it with everything in me, shit, I'm done. That's when it got real pitiful. That's when it got real incomprehensible and real demoralizing. You with me, fellas? He said, yeah, when you use again. Yeah, when you use again. We continue to dwell on this hopeless feature of this thing. He said, so what did it look like with you, Billy? I said, well, you know, man. Because he said, you know, it's going to be different this time. I'm a heroin addict, man, right? I knew every time I started again, you know, especially the last shots at the title. You know, I couldn't hardly buy into that one, that I thought it was going to be different this time, man. You know what I mean? He said, well, let's break it down, Billy. Let's look at yours. What happened with you? And as we broke it down and I looked at some things, got honest with myself, to myself, about myself, each and every time I used again, I thought it was going to be different this time. Right? Now, the way it looked like with me, depending on how far down the scale you are, I knew there was going to be some damage, Jamie. I knew that when I inventoried each and every one of them, I knew there was going to be some damage. I knew that, right? But what I was going to do is I was going to manage the damage better this time. I certainly wasn't going to need to go to treatment. I certainly wasn't going to have to do that again. I certainly wasn't going to get another felony. I certainly wasn't going to, you know what I mean, Bill? So each and every time I used again, even when I knew it was shitty and I knew I'd lost the power of choice, I knew that there was going to be some damage. But when I inventoried it real close, I thought it was going to be different this time. Because what I discovered in my inventory of it was that each and every time, even when I knew there was going to be some damage, what I was going to do was manage the damage better this time. Right? So I got here and they described that obsession. And in there it says we were smitten by an insane urge, Stephen. And he said what an insane urge is a crazy want to. Right? So as we inventoried that, you know, again, I didn't know about this merciless obsession he kept calling it, this damn, you know, he said the reason we call it merciless because it ain't got no mercy and it don't give a shit if your first treatment center. Or if you're 80 years old, it don't give a shit because it's merciless. It don't give a shit if everybody's still in your life or they've been long gone because it's merciless. It don't give a shit if I still get a check from the government and got a line on some shit or I don't. That shit's been long gone. You know why? Because it's merciless. He said, and if you're sitting around waiting for the event to happen for it to get this bad, like if you got to go to prison one more time, then you'll have paid. He said, man, you're going to miss it because, dude, it's merciless. Don't give a shit if you've never been to prison, young man. And it don't give a shit if you've been two or three times, young man. Because it's merciless, it don't give a shit. It's a crazy want to. And so we inventoried mine, and he made me look at it. I'm ready to move on and move forward. He said, nah, let's spend a minute on this. He said, what happened over here, Billy? And I said, I went to treatment. And he said, why? I said, well, it got shitty, man. I wanted it to stop. He said, okay, well, what happened right over here? I said, oh, yeah, I got out of treatment. He said, yeah, but I mean, what happened right here? I said, well, I used again. He said, why? I said, well, because I kind of wanted to. Dude, best I can recall, you know, I just kind of wanted to. He said, oh, okay. He said, what happened right over here then? A little bit later, I said, well, I went back to treatment. He said, why? I said, well, it got real shitty, and I said, I wanted to stop again, man. He said, okay, well, what happened over here? And I said, I used again. He said, why? I said, man, I decided I wanted to again, man. You know, I decided I wanted to use again, dude. He said, okay, my bad. He said, well, what happened right over here a little later? I said, well, I went back to treatment. He said, why? I said, I decided I wanted to stop, man, that had to stop. He said, okay, what happened over here a little bit later? I said, I used again. He like grinding it in, dude. He said, why? I said, I decided I wanted you again, motherfucker. I mean, what do you want from me? You know, he's trying to like grind me down and shit. I said, I decided I wanted you again. He said, what happened over here? I went back to treatment, man. He said, why, Eric? I said, man, because I decided I wanted to stop. He said, what happened over here? I said, I used again. He said, why? I said, I just decided I wanted to again, motherfucker. Are you happy? God damn. He said, okay, my bad, Billy. My bad. I guess you don't got that merciless obsession. I guess you just changed your mind a lot, is what happened to you. Is that what it was? You just changed your mind a lot, right? And I said, yeah, I guess so. He said, that's the obsession. That's the obsession. Guys, please hear that one. I thought what exempted me from this thing we call recovery for so long, right? The reason I felt so insincere, so insincere, was because I'd come in here, and after a little while, I would start kind of wanting to use again. You know what I mean? And so I'd sit in group, and I'd listen politely, and I'd go through the fucking memorandum, the whole protocol, the damn, you know, compliance shit, and show up for group on time, and be early sometimes, and even over and above on a dish duty or two, and do all that. But inside here, my secret place, I feel just kind of, you know, just kind of wanting to, Cullen. You know what I mean? And so I thought that exempted me from this. And they said, shit, dude, that's what really qualifies your ass. That's what really qualifies your ass. You with me? That you still want to. All the shit you went through and you still kind of want to? Come on, dude. He said, that's the obsession. That's the obsession. I didn't know that. That crazy want to. I thought that exempted me from recovery. I didn't know that's what really qualified me. That's what really qualified me. I didn't know what this recovery was about was getting rid of that shit. Getting rid of that crazy want to that always comes back to me, Nick. It always comes back to me. Have you ever stayed sober, Nick? Right? Why? You said you wanted to again? Oh, okay. That's the obsession, right? You ever stayed sober, Larry? Why? You said you wanted to drink again? Yeah. See, that's the obsession. You ever stayed sober, Jamie? Good. That last time you drank, why'd you drink again? Decided you wanted to again. Hey, I didn't know that's the obsession. I got out of treatment. You ever stay sober, Jared? Do you use again? Why? You decided you wanted to again, right? That's the obsession. See, I thought that exempted me from this shit, man, because I still kind of wanted to, you know what I mean? Because they say you got to really want to stop, right? There's a line in the big book that throws me off, man. It says when we get here, it says you got to want it above all else. And be willing to make the effort. And man, I had that pictured like this, right? But see, I'd get to these places, and I did want it above all else when I got here, but what would happen, Tyler? They'd go, and you know, and I kind of wanted it. You ever hear him say, I wanted to want to stop? I wanted to want to get sober. I wanted to want to be one of these AA people. I wanted to be one of these spiritually, you know, giant son of guns, right? I wanted to want that shit, but I just kind of, after a little while, man, I just didn't anymore. You know what I mean? What I really kind of wanted to do was my thing. You know, go out there and, yeah, I didn't want to not be a dad. I wanted to be a dad, but shit, could I have a drink, please? You know, as I do it? Yeah, you know, I wanted to be, you know, make good money and take care of my family and be there. I didn't want to be up under some bridge or in some treatment center all the time and shit. I wanted to be there, but I still kind of, if you don't mind, could I have just a drink as I go along, please? Would that be okay, too? I mean, you know, right? Because I still kind of wanted to, and so I thought that exempted me from this thing. Man, it never really hit me here. That's what really qualifies me. That's what really qualifies me for this thing we call recovery. I got this crazy want to. Did you drink again, Matt Howard? Why?
I wanted to.
Yeah, and we'll offer any one of 100 alibis. She was being a bitch. You know what I mean? Okay. We'll offer any. You know I'm sharing with you, not at you, bud. I'll offer any one of 100 alibis, but none of that shit makes sense in light of the havoc another drink always causes in my life, right? But I still wanted to. He said, oh, that's what you're going with, dude? Because you wanted to. My bad. Okay, shit. I bet. My bad. Because you wanted to. Okay, shit. Shut my mouth. My bad. He said, that's the obsession. That's the obsession. What I knew about me is that I always had this crazy want to that always came back. It always came back. And I could try to shake it off, you know, right? So one thing I knew for sure was it was coming back again. The guy sat down and shared with me, and I knew that about me. It was coming back again. It was coming back again, dude. For me to sit here and think that it wasn't, I'd be lying to myself like I have a million times. You know why, RD2? It always came back again. So for me to sit here and think right now that it wasn't going to, man, I'd be lying to myself. I'd be filling myself full of shit. This time I really mean it. This time I'm really going to make up my mind. This time I'm going to swear off on my dead father's grave. Check, that had happened. I was going to swear off on everybody alive and dead. That had happened. I was going to promise my wife and kids. This time I really, that had happened. I was going to promise the judge. I was going to promise myself. I was going to, dude, it always came back, Paul. Why'd you use again the last time, bud?
I said I wanted to see what they smelled like.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just kind of said you wanted to again? Yeah. That's the obsession. Merciless. Merciless. I've been to treatment centers before this one, man. Where they give you a little hug when you come in and go, hey, man, welcome. Glad you made it.
Good.
Okay. And then sit in 30 days of group and shit. Might even take the leap of faith game or whatever. And they give you a slap on the ass on the way out and tell you everything's going to be okay. And I got here and they said, shit. we got a basic text on campus here. It's called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You got to check it out, right? They made it real easy for guys like us. You can tell this thing was written by us, for us, to us, by alcoholics, for alcoholics, to alcoholics. You with me? Because they made it real easy for guys like us. They said, if you want to know more about alcoholism, Dalton, we got a chapter on it. Guess what it's called? Attention. It ain't no big deal. It's just our life's on the line. It ain't no big deal. We can drift off. It ain't no big deal. It's just our life is on the line. That's all. He said, if you want to know more about alcoholism, Dalton, we got a chapter on it. Guess what it's called? Close. It's called More About Alcoholism. I know. Ain't it weird? Isn't it crazy? He said, if you want to know if there is a solution to this thing called alcoholism, if there is a solution, we've got a chapter on that one too. Guess what it's called? It's called There's a Solution. If you don't know like how it works, how this solution works, how it works, we've got a chapter on that one too. Guess what it's called? How it works. Y'all write out if you know the answer. If you don't know how to take like how it works and like put it into action, we got a chapter on that too. Guess what it's called? I know. You know what I'm saying? So in the chapter more about alcoholism, like he said, man, I don't know who's been telling you that shit. Gonna be okay. He says shit. They are either ignorant to the illness of alcoholism or they're cold ass lying to you, dude. We got a chapter on it. It's called More About Alcoholism. In the chapter More About Alcoholism, it says we are in the grips of a progressive illness. The name of that chapter is not More About the Solution. It's called More About Alcoholism. So here's some more about that shit. You ready? Eric, here's some more about the shit. You ready? If they've been telling you around here it's gonna be okay, they're either lying to you or they're filling you full of shit, Eric. I don't care if it was your big brother or your sponsor. Not alcoholism, eh? Stick to the big book. Become a student of that son of a bitch. Don't bet your life on what big brother shares with you, what your sponsor shares with you necessarily. Become a student of the book yourself. Don't bet your life on what you hear in these AA meetings either. Because what's working for some of those people in those AA meetings will fucking kill us. If you got what I got, it will kill you. Just don't drink no matter what. Go to meetings. Man, dude. It'll be okay. Fuck you. I cringe. I cringe when I go to some of these meetings over here. And there's some good meetings. I love AA, right? But I cringe when I go to some of these meetings and you'll have a newcomer come sit in there and he's beat the shit and he's snotting on himself and everybody wants to hug him and tell him it's going to be okay. Man, that's when we need to really get him and smash home this hopelessness of the thing. Because the truth is, no, the fuck, it ain't going to be okay. The name of the chapter ain't more about the solution. It's more about alcoholism. So here's some more about that shit. In the chapter more about alcoholism, it says we're in the grips of a progressive illness. What they mean by that, they say it on the next line. It says over any considerable period, it gets worse, never better. That's some more about this shit. No, it ain't going to be okay. And if they told you it is, they're filling you full of shit or they're ignorant to the illness of alcoholism. No, it's not going to be okay, Mark. No, it's not. Can I get a witness in here? Every time I thought it couldn't get any worse, Ryan, what happens, bud? Don't it get worse? Hell yeah, don't take my word. Don't just say that just to kick it, Ryan. Really and truly, what happened? It got worse. What happened, John? Every time you think it can't get worse, what happened? It got fucking worse, right?
This time it can't get worse. It got worse.
Huh, man?
It can't get any worse.
Yes, it will. And it's gonna. And that's exactly what's gonna happen. And that's what's gonna keep fucking happening. It's called alcoholism. Alcoholism. We ain't talking about the flu, like Joe said. This ain't gingivitis or a fucking earache. You don't take some antibiotics and get over this. And not just when you don't, it's alcoholism. They call it the merciless obsession. Merciless. In the 12 and 12, it says it's under the lash of that son of a bitch. It's under the lash of alcoholism that we are driven here. And it's here that we discover the fatal nature of our situation. Then and only then do we become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the dying can be. We stand ready to do anything which will lift this merciless obsession from us, this crazy want-to that always comes back, man. Right? I thought that exempted me, Eric. Turns out that's what really qualifies me. That's what really qualifies me for this thing they call recovery. Right? So when they call it, the words they throw at it is merciless. Right? This insane urge is merciless. In the vision for you, it says we had this insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did. And this heartbreaking obsession, they call it heartbreaking. This heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control is going to enable us to do that. Right? So when they call it merciless, what they mean by that is it's merciless. And if you're sitting around waiting for the event to happen, you know, for the shit to get just bad enough, and this time I'm going to, you know, if I have to, if I lose one, if I, then this, you know, then, man, we owe it to each other to share with you. That's not alcoholism, dude. It, you know, now I think we downplay it a little bit. You know, you hear them say, Nick, it ain't for people that want it, that need it, or people that want it. It's for people that do it. But we kind of downplay those first two a little bit. You know, if I need it enough to make me want it, well, then the needing it's obviously important. They call it stages of change in counseling. And then if I want it enough to make me do it, well, then shit. Right? That one's important too. But like I share that step one, when they say it's merciless, it's my motivator. Joe Shipley says it's our catalyst. That's what's going to propel us into doing the rest of the stuff. What we finally discover is that it's merciless and that it ain't like cage fighting that we watch on TV where some guy gets you pretty badly mangled, gets you in one of them holes and shit, and you get a little handout and stuff like that, and some bitch comes flying in and goes, "Hey, John!" He said, Not with this illness. Yeah, right? Mommy showed up this time and got me out of the shit. Okay, woo! Thank God that. He said, "Not with this illness." Nope. Not with this one. Because you say so? Oh, shit, no, not with this illness. Because you say so, my bad. Because now you say so, okay. Please don't go with that one. You're going to stay sober because you say so. Okay, good. Right on. All right. Oh, shit. Shit's about to get real pitiful and incomprehensible and demoralizing in your life, bud. That's your recovery plan because you say so? Come on, man. You never said so before? Yeah, but I didn't mean it. This illness. It's merciless. It will drag us until there's nothing left of us. And since this illness affects people's lives like no other human sickness can, it'll drag you till there's nothing left to the lives attached to your life. Their only recourse, all they're able to do, it's called self-preservation, that deepest instinct we read about the other day. Self-preservation. My wife finally had to say, "You're killing me. Get the fuck, you gotta go." Right? And I was mad at her, Mark. This illness, this human sickness, that affects people like no other human sickness can, right? We gotta go. They can't bear to watch the fight. They gotta go. It'll drag me till there's nothing left of me and nothing left to the lives attached to me if they hang in there long enough. If they hang in there long enough, it'll take it all. It'll take it from them and you, right? I describe mine like I was in a boxing match over the years, you know, all these countless treatment centers. And a few rounds go by and you get beat up pretty bad and you're back in the corner going, "Cut me, Nick," you know, and shit. "I know I can beat this thing. I know I can." Right? And when the fight first starts, we got all kinds of people in our life, Matt, don't we? There's mommies and kids and employers and lots of people, church folks and even school kids, I mean, you know, neighbors and shit. Everybody's going, "Come on, Billy, we love you. You can do it," right? And as the round after round after round after round goes by, you look around and there might be just mommy over there, Mark, this time, you know, cheering. And maybe wife and kids still kind of hanging in there. And I'm over there going, okay, pat me neck again. You know, and all of a sudden you get a tug on my shirt. And it's Katie. She says, Daddy. What? She says, Mama says we gotta go. We're about to leave. I say, My kids, that's good motivation. You tell her hang in there. I can do that. I can beat this thing. Ding, ding, ding. And there I go out for another round. Right? And I come back and they're gone. And I wonder why they're gone. They can't bear to watch the fight. It's killing them. They can't bear to watch the fight no more. And I wonder why they left. Why they're gone. Right? I used to be mad at them. They can't bear to watch the fight. So all the premise around here is as long as you think you can quit, you got a chance. Whenever I finally knew I couldn't quit, you wonder why we have such conviction? You know, it looks like, does it look like maybe we're convicted to this thing? I got conviction when I share with you, Larry. Does it look like that on me at all? Does it? You know why that is? Because under the lash of alcoholism, I was driven here. And it's here I discovered the fatal nature of my situation. And it was then and only then that I become as open-minded to conviction and as willing to listen as the fucking dying can be. I stand ready to do anything which will lift this merciless obsession from me. This crazy want-to that always comes back to me. Yeah, that's more about this shit, this illness. To your own self be true. Every time you think it can't get any worse, what happens, dude? Right? So what the word they throw at that obsession that I think is appropriate is the suddenly word. Y'all seen that in the book? Man, it's like you're reading that like a horror novel almost in there. More about alcoholism. It says suddenly, you know, the music goes off and shit. Suddenly, suddenly, the thought crossed my mind. Suddenly, and what I'm telling you, when they share in there that this strange mental blank spot, this insane urge. Parallels with our sound reasoning and fails to hold us in check. What they mean by that is it's neck and neck. And like Joe tells us, man, if you're sitting in here and you know, we haven't used again yet, you know, because we're in treatment, you know, but also hadn't fist up. But I haven't used again yet. And you know why, Mark? Because I ain't really even thinking about it shit in here. Shit, I'm good. You know what I'm saying? I even kind of made up my mind, Eric. You know what I'm saying? And I'm kind of getting off a little on the spirituality stuff, too. It's kind of cool. You know what I mean? It's kind of nice, and you know, what good are spiritual principles if you can't act smugly superior to people, you know what I mean? So I'm starting to get off on that part a little bit, too, and tell the wife and stuff a little bit about it, and got a little bit going on and stuff, but I ain't really done a good fourth and fifth step. I ain't really trying to put together an eight-step list when I step across that threshold going to make my first demands if I ain't really at that yet, you know what I mean? Somewhere inside of me, I think I'm going to stay sober because I say so, if I'm honest with myself. Somewhere inside of me, I think that that's what it's going to take, that that'll do it. In the 12 and 12 in step 6, it says we'll only do as much as we think. It's a human nature thing. I'm only going to do as much as I think I need to do to get me by in life, according, of course, to my various and sundry ideas of what will get me by, right? And they call it stages of change in counseling. But the way we change is that we fully concede our innermost self that we were alcoholics, that I got that merciless obsession. I've got a short amount of time that I'm able to say no. That suddenly always comes back to me. And when suddenly comes, you know, it knows when I'm sitting in treatment, this thing that runs parallel with my sound reasoning. It knows. You know what I mean, Matt Howard? It does. It knows, right? Me and you I tried to share with you a little bit the past couple weeks about that, right? What everybody wants for Matt is exactly what Matt wants for Matt. You know, it really is. It's how to get there from here. That's what we're talking about. We suggest that you take 12 steps first, you know, and then go where you want to go. Just do what you want to do after that. You know what I mean? Trust it. Pray a lot. Ask God for inspiration and trust it, right? But can we take 12 steps first? You know, where you want to go with your life, Stephen, where your family wants you to go, where we want you to go, it's all the same damn thing. We're talking about how to get there from here. You with me? And it's 12 steps first. You with me? Take some steps first. And then trust it. Right? Because if I haven't done that, what I'm probably thinking I'm going to do is stay sober because I say so. And what we're here to share with you, the guy that's been around for a few minutes, We owe it to each other to tell you that that plan don't work, Jared. You don't get to stay. If you've got what I've got, you don't get to stay sober because you fucking say so. Hi. Welcome. How you doing? Because you say so. Not with this illness. And can we care enough about each other to tell each other the truth? That plan don't work, man. That plan, please use my experience on that one. I damn near died to gain the experience. Please let me share it with you. Please try to receive it. Because you don't get to stay sober because you say so. That plan does not work, does it, Lance? It don't work just because you say so, Paul. Right? That don't work. That plan don't work. Not if you got what I got. Because we have a merciless obsession. And it runs parallel with my sound reason. And it knows when I'm in treatment. It knows when I just got out. It knows when nobody's looking. It knows when everybody's looking. It knows when you just got some money. It knows when you ain't got no money. It knows when. It knows. When you're coming up on that exit, it knows. It knows when you ain't been by it in a while either. It knows, man. It knows the people that got it and the people that don't got it. It knows the people that care and the people that don't give a shit. It knows the people that'll tell and the people that won't tell. It knows. Right? And the word they throw at it is suddenly. And what I'm sharing with you is this, fellas, that suddenly don't leave time to write a fourth and fifth step. You don't. Please take my word for it. Suddenly, don't leave time to pick up a commitment at the 12-step meeting. Suddenly, don't leave time for me to grab a sponsee and start helping a guy with the steps. Suddenly, I'm done, man. Suddenly, I'm gone. I don't know if you've ever had it on you, Nick, but suddenly, I'm fucking out of there, dude. Suddenly, it's like Custer's last stand, and the Indians are still coming across the fucking hill, dude. I mean, suddenly, I'm out of there. You don't leave time for that. So there's another line in the book that says, a few of us, how y'all doing? Welcome. It says, a few of us are fortunate enough to be so situated that we can give nearly all our time to this work. Man, when I was here, Mark, I didn't feel like the fortunate few. You with me? But boy, can we see it now? Huh? Can we see it now? How many guys have been through and then back through? Right? And didn't see it maybe the first time I was here, but after that, it was bad. Right? A few of us are fortunate enough that we can give nearly all our time to this work. So my motivator, my catalyst, what's going to propel me is alcoholism. Alcoholism, man. Not the flu. So what we talk about in the first step, a whole bunch, what they describe in the big book, the first working part of the text is what won't work to keep us sober if we're real ones. And one of the things it says that I'm trying to smash home this morning says the most powerful desire to stop is of absolutely no avail. What they mean by that is it'll work right until time it don't work no more. I'll change my mind. That's what makes me alcoholic. Man, that's what makes me a chronic alcoholic is the progressiveness of this thing. And it says it'll get worse over any considerable period. And what they mean by any considerable period, it don't mean out there using and drinking periods. It means sitting in here not drinking and using periods. Because it's any considerable period, it'll get worse. That means it'll get worse if I'm drinking and using. It's going to get worse if I'm not drinking and using too, because it's any considerable period. If it's sitting in here and it's untreated and it's laying dormant, dude, it's subtle and it's sneaky and it's coming again. So we got to get honest with ourselves, to ourselves, about ourselves. If I think I'm going to stay sober because I say so, I'm feeling myself full of shit again. I am feeling myself full of shit again. If you think that eventually the day is going to come and you're going to want to bad enough and then you can stop, please use my experience. I went through, my family suffered greatly for me to learn that experience. I suffered greatly to learn that experience. Please let me share it with you. It don't work just because I say so. It'll work right up until the time it don't work no more. It's the merciless obsession. It's the crazy want to that comes back. What really hooked me on the illness of alcoholism is when they talked about what it looked like when I was sober. And they called it around here spiritual malady. It's what it looks like when I'm sober. It turns out what makes me an alcoholic is not just what it does to me, and it does lots of things to us and to our families like we described. But what also made me alcoholic is what it does for me. In the doctor's opinion, it says we drink essentially because we like the effect produced by it. The sensation is so elusive that while we admit it is injurious, we cannot after a time differentiate the truth from the false. Does the alcoholic life seem the only normal one? What they mean by that, RD2, is it is so powerful what it does for me that I can't even see what it's doing to me. That's what it means. When I'm out there and I'm on it and I'm in the grips, I can't even see what it's doing to me because what it keeps doing for me. Huh, Larry? Everybody just, and that's when it's everybody else's problem. But you take it away from me for a minute, and I'll sit right here in treatment, welcome. And all of a sudden, I ain't got it to do for me, so I can start to kind of see what it's doing to me, right? And so, yeah, we'll make up our mind, firm resolution. Not going to do it again. Shit. But the doctor says we've become restless. These are just some words he throws at it. Restless, irritable, discontent, right? Is that going on with anybody sitting right here, untreated alcoholism? Restless? What's restless look like? I see guys in morning meditation. I ain't knocking nobody, but my legs are just bouncing like this. I just want this damn thing to be over. It's like I want to be anywhere doing anything else, but, you know, I can't wait to go do chores or some shit. Hear this guy sharing again. I just need to get up, man. You know what I mean? It's called restless. Restlessness, right? I just want to get out of here, man. You know what I mean? I just need to go. It's called discontentedness. I want to be anywhere else doing anything else. I don't know where the fuck that is, but where I'm at right now, it's called discontent. It's a chronic illness of malcontent. I had it my whole life. My sponsor inventoried me that with me real good, man. I can remember, for example, I would get arrested and go to the city jail. You know, that's where they first take you when you go. You usually go to, like, the city jail, right? And I remember thinking, shit, I got a blue one. I ain't going to be able to bond out and shit. So, man, if I could just get to the county, man. If I could just get to the county where you got a real man, you know what I'm saying, that would be okay. Now I get to the county and they're going to give me some more time. So I'd be in the county thinking, shit, if I could just get on the chain, man. Captain Chain, get TDC, get this time started. Then I get the TDC and I say, man, if I could just make trustee. If I could only make trustee then, you know what I mean, I'd be good. And you'd get done. And then I'd get trustee Kevin. Man, if I just get out of here, man, get my life going, you know what I mean? And I'd just get out of there. Man, if I could just get this job, if I could just get that car, if I could just get a little bit more money, if I could just get, and before you know it, I'm in the city jail again, go, man, if I could just get the county. I was just always discontent. So the main thing on that spiritual malady that got me more than anything else is when they described what it looked like when I was sober. You know, I was in the malady a whole bunch even when I was using in the end. But I'm talking about when they described what it looked like when I was sober. Right? There's a line in the big book that says, I know I got to get along without it. That's what I would know a bunch of times. I know I got to get along without it. It says, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? That's saying some shit for guys like us. You know what I mean? That's saying some stuff for guys like us. When they say something happens to us bodily and mentally that's different from our fellows, something happens to me spiritually that's different from my fellows when I drink and use too. And it got to the end of where it sucked and it would increase my spiritual malady, but it was worse when I was sober. And in the 12 and 12, it describes it as an elevator that you can get off anytime you want to. What I describe mine more as, what makes more sense to me, is I call it a downhill train ride when we first get on the train. You know, and I remember when I first got on the train, and it was a long time ago. I couldn't see it then, but I can see it now. I can remember when I first got on the train, you know, and there was actually a lot of people, a lot of different friends and stuff on the train, too. You know what I mean? This downhill train ride. And it would get a little rocky at times. I'd be grabbing for support, you know what I mean? A little bit, you know, oh, man, shit was kind of fun. And there were other people jumping off that son of a bitch, right? I'd be like, what's wrong with you? It's like those parties I would go to. I'd get up in the morning, I'd, you know, come to. And everybody's going, ah. I discovered real early the best way to fix a hangover. You know what that is, Nick?
Keep drinking.
Yeah, you keep drinking. Hell yeah. And they're going, ooh, how can you drink that shit because I got a hangover? That's why. That made sense to me. Right? They're jumping off the train. I'm still on that kind of shit. And what it did for me, I'm rolling again. And as it gets worse and worse, right? Downhill train ride, like I say, every once in a while it'll pull off at a station. That's what it does. It'll pull off at the station. Emerge remorseful. Right? Beer Recovery Center. Anybody want off?
Right.
Okay. And there it goes again. And the deal is, sometimes I'd get off the train, Beer Recovery Center. Right? I'm off the train. The problem was, now I'm hanging out on the platform. Right? I got tickets in my hands. There's the smell of baggage and shit everywhere, you know. I think I'm, right? think I'm doing this thing all the time, but the problem is it would get to where it would suck off the train.
It sucked on the train. I mean, I talked about that train ride. Sucked, didn't it?
Man, that like detoxed me from the train ride, too. Sucked or whatever, didn't it, Lance? It was terrible. And there's some guys going,
I sucked over here, too.
I'm just so happy to be sober. Just so glad.
Nice to be sober. And that train ride starts looking appealing again, doesn't it? It ain't really going that fast. I don't want to think about the train, but it would suck so bad off the train that I'd end up back on it. And what I'm sharing with you guys is that on the downhill train ride, there ain't no guarantee it's going to pull over again. Or if it's going to pull over, or when it's going to pull over. You know what I mean? Kale, right? I mean, lots of names. Lots of them, huh? Lots of people. Lots of alumni. Lots of people. Lots of people that don't ever get a chance to get here, but a lot of them have. Ain't no telling if or when it's going to pull over again. You know what the big problem with the train ride is, RD2? Right? You don't realize you can't get off the train until guess when? That's what everybody says. You know what the real answer is? See, I know what the real answer to that is. And I think you do too. You don't realize you can't get off the train until you try to get off the train. That's when you realize you can't. Right? If I'm honest with myself. That's when you realize you can't get off the train. Is when you try to get off the train, Eric. You ever try to get off the train, Eric? Yeah? That's when I realized I couldn't. That's when things got real pitiful, real incomprehensible, and real demoralizing. You don't realize you can't get off the train until you try to get off the train. So, what I really was going to talk about today was, how old is 11?
Damn, Billy.
Why we would, so here's the need for recovery, fellas. You ready? What we, the name of our outfit, in case you guys haven't noticed, is Bay Area Recovery Center. It's because what we do here is recovery. I get to go to different meetings up in Houston, and I've been to some meetings with other treatment centers and stuff now. It's part of my gig here. Go figure. You know I detox back there, man, off heroin, methadone, and vodka. Now I represent Bay Area Recovery Center, and I go to different treatment centers, right? And those people, they'll go... there's been a few people said this to me, John. They say, oh, who are you with? And I said, yeah, I'm Billy with Bay Area Recovery Center. And they go, oh, Bay Area Recovery Center. Y'all are that solution-oriented place. That's what they said to me before, Lance. And I went, yeah. Yeah, I guess so, you know. And I think to myself, what the fuck else would you be? You're the illness-oriented place, my bad. And I think some of them might be because they give you a lot of education on the illness and of the illness and about the illness and all that stuff. And I think it's like cruel and unusual punishment to leave somebody with the problem without some hope, without a solution, right? So the name of our outfit is Bear Recovery Center. What we do here, see, a few of us are fortunate enough to be so situated we can give nearly all our time to doing this. And this is what we call recovery. It's called recovery. It's about doing recovery. Bear Recovery Center. When my dude finished breaking off the stick man with me, helping me, with the step one exercise, got it broke down to me. He said, okay, Billy, so what I suggest you do, Colin, Eric, this is what he told me. He said, Billy, what I suggest you do is don't even try to stay sober. If you got what I got, the illness of alcoholism, don't even try to stay sober. That's what I do. And I remember looking around going,
the fuck?
Man, you're going to get in trouble to hear you telling me that shit, dude. He goes, no, I'm serious, bud. Really, I want to go look at the sign. I thought that was the whole point of this shit, dude. He's like, oh, shit, no. No, hell no. Nope. He said, if you got what I got, the illness of alcoholism, what I suggest you do is don't even try to stay sober. Please don't play the sobriety game. Please. He said, sober will make you drink, dude. Right? He said, if you got what I got, the illness of alcoholism, please don't even try to stay sober. He said, first of all, it's going to be impossible. Right? He said, but hey, you know what, man? Don't take my word for it. Check your own experience. Right? How sober for you? Dude. I thought he had like a camera fucking with the new guy going to show up in group later and make fun of me and shit. Don't even try to stay sober. He said, no, really. First of all, If you got what I got, it's going to be impossible. Sober. Don't take my word for it. Check your own experience, Larry. Have you ever stayed sober? Turns out sober for me was impossible. He says, yeah, and if you can pull it off for a little while, man, fucking unbearable, dude. He said, but don't take my word for it. Check your own experience. Huh? Was it like unbearable? Right? He said, yeah, that sober will make you drink, dude. Right? He said, the number one reason for relapse, you know what the number one reason for relapse is, Mark? About being sober. That's why you drink again last time, dude? Because I was sober. Right? He said, yeah, that sober will make you drink. You with me? He said, what we do here, stay at a recovery center. Anybody want off? What we do here is recovery. In that newcomer packet, it says 100% of the people that come here will have the opportunity to learn what it means to be alcoholic. 100% of the people that come here will be given an opportunity to get a sponsor, work the steps, do the program of recovery. 100% of the people will have this opportunity. Right? So again, a few of us are fortunate enough. What we do here is recovery. The difference between sober and recovery is the difference between night and day. If it wasn't, you'd have a different person stand up here talking to you now, I promise. I don't not drink and use because I got this badge on, because I've drank and used with the badge before. That is not why I don't drink and use today. The reason I don't drink and use it today is because I've developed accidentally a fit spiritual condition. That's what it is. And like an alcoholic, I wanted more. And I want more. And my commitment to it hadn't wavered since I've been here. I'm not cured of alcoholism. What I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Every day is a day I try to carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. I say His will, not mine, be done. Those are thoughts that kind of go with me constantly. Doing that's an act of my own will. So 100% of us will have that. So what we do here is recovery. And the difference between recovery and sober is the difference between night and day. Thank you, man.
Thank you.